And that was Guido Serpentino. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. My special guest is Craig Canada. It is Canada?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And let me turn up your mic so people can actually hear you. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
This, of course, is a two-hour show around civil rights locally, local political issues. We throw in a little music, a little craziness, a little humor, and whatever you bring to the mix. The phone number to call in is 427-3772. Lots of interviews rolling at me here, and I'm not going to be able to get them all out to you, and so I'll be back with them on Sunday when I have a longer show, 9:30 to 1 on Sunday morning. So feel free to tune in then. This show is also archived on the Internet at the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or www.huffsantacruz.org if you want to check it out. Shows aren't always described in detail. Sometimes the descriptions linger long before the shows actually get archived. You actually get the show first and the description later. But if you hear something you're interested in, you want to hear it again, check that website, huffsantacruz.org. For more information at off times when the show isn't playing, if you want to get involved with civil rights for homeless people, at least from my side of the microphone here, give a call to the Huff line. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Well, you can also, by the way, check, we have a chat room at pagesincolor.com, which isn't used much, but who knows? Maybe it'll actually come into some use tonight. That's pagesincolor.com, and you click on chat. You write in your name, and away you go. You don't have to present any ID or anything of that sort. You don't need a visa. You're just going to just jump on board. And you'll be there apparently with me. I'll be alone with you. Or you can just call the studio, 427-3772. Off-air number here if you want to get a message through to the folks here at the studio, because there are many, many broadcasters. I'm only one of them. We need your help. We want to get your information from the community. Whatever you got going, let us know about it. If you think it's of community interest, that number is 427-4523, 427-4523. But again, to call us here live to talk with me or Craig, you can reach us at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. My goodness, it looks like I'm getting a note here on the board that we're streaming on the radio on Freak Radio and we're not broadcasting. Charming. I don't know if that's true or not. If it is, we're making a nice archival show here, Craig. And we're giving it giving the word to some people in Toronto and Germany as who might be listening to us. Craig, I called you in here today. I mean, I ran into you out at the Homeless Service Center, and you agreed to come on the show after some reflection because I saw some of your writing online at one of the Sentinel forums. That's our local newspaper advertising sheet, actually. And I was impressed with the way you held your own among the bigots in bigot land, as I would describe them. You want to kind of review for us some of the issues that that came up there? I know that the use of medical marijuana was one of them. The treatment by homeless services was another. You yourself are currently houseless.
That's right. I'm homeless.
Uh-huh. And how did you happen to turn to the Sentinel and to be their whipping boy, so to speak?
Well, I didn't actually intend to do that. I was hoping to raise money for the Interfaith Satellite Services Program, which is a program that they have church groups. They take people to the churches to sleep. It's supposed to be emergency housing. They have generally two groups for men, one for women and one for families. And that's where I have been sleeping for several months, 3 or 4 days a week anyway. But then I was told I couldn't stay there anymore. And a series of events happened that convinced me that I was, I'll put it this way. Just about every housing situation that's available in this town, everything that's available to get people back on their feet, is an SLE, which is a sober living environment. And they test your blood before they let you in. As most of you probably know, cannabis stays in your blood about 28 days, whereas meth and all the other drugs stay in there in your blood about 3 days. And so I was barred from that. The fact is that I would not be homeless now if I were not a medical marijuana patient.
Let me ask you there. At what point did you learn you were barred, and who told you that?
Well, initially, I can't remember exactly, but the first time was probably 6 or 8 months ago. And in October, I put myself on the list again. I was on the list once.
And for what housing are we talking about?
This is Page Smith specifically.
Page Smith Community House, okay.
Yeah, 115 Coral. And so I was on the list once, and then they told me they didn't accept medical marijuana patients. And I thought I would try again. For one thing, I was hoping perhaps a miracle would happen and the Supreme Court would rule differently than it did in the Wham case and something would change in the meantime. But I put myself back on the list in October. And
well, the Supreme Court isn't really at issue. I mean, California has a law that says Proposition 215, passed by the voters, allows people to use medical marijuana for personal medical use with a recommendation, either oral or written of a physician. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not. And in addition, there is section, I believe, 3.5 of the state constitution, which says that if there is a conflict between state and federal law, that the state is bound to follow state law until the issue is settled on appeal with the United States Supreme Court. Now, what I have been told is they're worried about their federal funding. They are all funded by HUD, and so that is the issue. And I've been told that by a number of people. And so that's why I've been barred from virtually every service in the city designed to help people get back on their feet.
So if you lie about it, they might let you in, but actually you can't even lie about it because blood tests don't lie.
Well, that's true. I don't know if they'd actually, you know, test me or not. You know, you asked me what got me started on this, and shortly before I started posting on the Sentinel, I talked to a guy named Willie. I'd seen him down at the shelter. He seemed like a nice guy, just down on his luck. He had a wife and a child. And I watched him with his child, and he was so good with that child. And I talked to him one day. He told me he was a medical marijuana patient, and he had tried to get into Rebley housing. And they told him point blank, give up the medical marijuana or you can't have a place to live.
That's the family shelter. It's in the same complex of buildings as Page Smith. There's Page Smith Community House, River Street Shelter, Rebley Family Center, and then, of course, the come in, stand in line for an hour in the rain, go off to the armory and come back, homeless resource center. Or am I putting it too starkly?
Oh, not at all. It's very similar to jail as far as I'm concerned. The only difference is you can leave.
So you had spoken to Willie about the Rebley and has not been able to get in there because of marijuana use.
Right, and he felt that if he had lied and not told them he was a medical marijuana patient, that he would have been housed, and that his only reason that he was homeless is that he wouldn't lie. There's another issue, is because when the people at the homeless people, the clients of the homeless services, learned about who I was and how I got there and my issues, they thought it was ridiculous. And they all told me, you know, there's people in there taking morphine, there's people in there taking methadone, and they have a realistic look at the thing. These people are not sober. These are not sober living environments. Most of the people in those places are so looped on pills, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. It's sad. You know, I don't really want to be around that myself, but...
you need a place to live.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So your alternative has been to sleep outside?
That's it. You know, my credit's exhausted now. I'm just about bankrupt. I noticed the motels didn't drop their rates this winter. So the motel that I've been staying in is $20 more than it was this time last year. But, yeah, I am now sleeping in a tent, and I have been doing that for a while, and I did that through the summer several days a week as well, under a bush, in a park, wherever.
Inside city limits or outside?
Both.
Mm-hmm. I know at the Huff meeting every Wednesday, for those who are interested, at the county building right outside the metal detector in the Breezeway Atrium area at 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning. Come on down. Free coffee if you can't afford it. There was a couple that came, Bill and Chris, also known as Pa and Ma, who spoke about organizing a protest of homeless people because of the fact that not only are the police enforcing the Santa Cruz's infamous sleeping ban, which bans sleeping on any public property, even when you're in your own private vehicle legally parked after 11 o'clock at night, but also they're using, apparently, according to Bill, and reports he's gotten regularly from his work at Elm Street and elsewhere, citations during the daytime for, quote, camping if you have a sleeping bag or any other camping equipment based upon Section 6.36010C of the camping ordinance, which actually requires that you have the intention of remaining overnight and that you set up bedding or a place to camp, not simply carry equipment with you. So he's interested in establishing a protest, getting ticketed himself, and taking the issue to court with a bunch of people there watching and perhaps doing the same thing. Whether he's going to do this, and this is something a lot of starts have been made at in the past 15 or 20 years here. I've seen many of them. I've been a part of some of them. We'll have to see if this one goes anywhere. He also mentioned that tents are being slashed out in the county and homeless equipment burned or dumped. Is this an exaggeration, or do you have any knowledge or experience with this situation if it's happening?
The only knowledge I have of this, and I don't know what happened, but there was somebody that was camping near me, and last week his camp was ripped. He thinks it was a raccoon. I don't know.
A raccoon and not a raccoon with a badge and a gun.
I really don't know. He doesn't know what happened either, but his tent was destroyed.
But you've been around about a year, and you haven't heard stories of...
Oh, I've heard lots of stories of people's stuff being taken.
But not by police or rangers or deputies that you know of, or?
Yes, I now I can't give you specifics, but I can remember several people who came in and said they were tagged and their stuff was taken, their lines were cut, that sort of thing.
Huh. Now, have you looked at the last year of your experiences here in Santa Cruz, Craig? Would you say most of it was indoors, most of it was outdoors? How often did you use the armory shelter or the Interfaith Satellite Shelter church program?
Through the summer, I generally stayed at the slept with the ISSP about 4 days a week. So, as far as indoors versus outdoors, I guess I would say probably 2/3 of my time was indoors, sleeping on a church floor in a motel. Another 1/3 was outdoors.
Now, this is actually there's a rather limited program in the summer, and most people will be turned away if they come to the ISSP program. You're an older man.
I'm over 50. Yes.
You're over 50, and was this one of the reasons that you were able to get in?
Yes, and I'm also disabled.
And what's your disability?
I'm bipolar, major clinical depression, a couple of other things, but essentially bipolar.
Mm-hmm. And your medication for that is
cannabis.
And tell us a little bit how successful or unsuccessful that's been.
It's the most successful drug I've ever used. I've been through a lot of pharmaceuticals in my life, especially the SSRIs, Paxil, Prozac, and so forth. I was one of the first people to take Prozac in about 1986 when it was still experimental, I believe, before it was officially released or released for general consumption or whatever. And I had a horrible experience with that. I woke up one morning, standing up in the middle of my bed. I had smashed the alarm clock against the wall, angry because it had woke me up. And I'm the kind of person that it generally takes me a pot of coffee, 3-4 cigarettes, and a couple of hours to wake up in the morning. It scared me to death. And I threw the stuff in the toilet. And then I went into a cataleptic depression, which lasted about 6 weeks, and lost my job.
What kind of work were you doing?
I worked for Pricewaterhouse. I had an office on the 40th floor of 555 California in San Francisco. My title was analyst. I functioned as their in-house computer, I guess you'd say their in-house MIS person.
And that's an abbreviation for?
Management Information Systems. I was their mm-hmm. computer guru.
Okay. And so since then you've been using cannabis pretty regularly to the exclusion of other psychotropic or atypical drugs?
Well, not since then. After that, I tried other SSRIs. It was about 10 years after that when I was at the end of my rope and on the streets in San Francisco. Terrence Hallinan had been elected DA, and instead of needing a recommendation to enter the cannabis club, all you needed was a diagnosis. They had a list of what they call presumptive diagnosis. And so with my diagnosis, I was admitted to the cannabis club. And I must say, I went in there for all the wrong reasons. But when I tried to use cannabis medicinally, I found not only did it work, but it worked better than anything ever had. And it didn't have the side effects. On the SSRIs,
SSRIs are?
Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
A typical one would be?
Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, those.
Thank you.
On those, I couldn't read because the pressure in my eyes was so great they wouldn't change focus. I had uncontrollable diarrhea. I couldn't be out in the sun more than 5 minutes because I was hypersensitive to light. I experienced a kind of nerve pain in my skin. I was essentially a prisoner in my room. It was horrible, and they made me crazy as a loon. So it's been about 10 years now that I've been using, and it was 10 years after I used Prozac that I became a medical marijuana patient. And it's been 10 years now that I have been a medical marijuana patient and used nothing else. And incidentally, after I became a medical marijuana patient, I applied for disability and told them that my medicine was cannabis. You cannot apply for disability without them asking what medicines you use. And so that delayed my disability decision for 5 years. But in my disability decision, they say 3 times that it was not, that the cannabis is not a factor in my disability. That is, as far as the government would go as far as recognizing cannabis as a legitimate medicine.
Is it a federal claim you made or a state claim?
Yes, federal disability claim, Social Security disability. And I think that's quite an achievement and quite remarkable myself.
Do you know of anybody else who's been successful in being able to acknowledge that they used cannabis and still get disability status from the federal government?
I'm not aware of anyone.
Are you aware of people who have been turned down and have tried to do that?
I don't have no knowledge of that either.
Right, so we don't know. We're talking with Craig Canada, who is a local writer. And just what the heck are you, Craig? How would you describe yourself?
I don't know. I don't know.
A local question mark. But he certainly seems pretty articulate at describing his own experiences, and perhaps you have some questions for him or some comments. I know that you provoked a lot of commentary from the peanut gallery at the Sentinel, when you were on their forum. The forum, by the way, for those who don't know, is an online kind of series of chat? That's not really a chat room. It's sort of a list where you go. How would you describe that?
As a conversation or discussion over time, generally.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a thread. You can keep talking on a certain issue, and you get to it by going to the Sentinel website and then going to their forums. And you're there under the moniker of
Palm Springs Bum.
Palm Springs Bum. Now, we've conducted a long search for Palm Springs Bum, and I finally ran into this man, as I said, about a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago. I first read your writings when I was down south on vacation, and I noticed how you were single-handedly and quite caustically holding off the right-wing hordes, as I would describe them. And a lot of it was about, I mean, it became later about the issue of cannabis, but a lot of it was about the issue of homelessness and services here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and presumptions that people have about homeless people. One of the things that really pissed me off is when I went to Elm Street to get for food and had to listen to a sermon for half an hour about how you deserve to be homeless if you're homeless and you're screw-ups. And some people are. Maybe a lot of homeless people are, but all of them certainly aren't, and a lot of them aren't.
What about your connections with the homeless community here? Have you had any sense of, I got to kind of jump ahead here a little bit, is there any solidarity among homeless people around either police misconduct or institutional discrimination or injustices that people commonly share as people who are outside and houseless?
Yes, in the sense that I think most of them agree with me. I can remember people coming up to me frequently and saying that needed to be said, or saying they supported me. But as far as actually doing something, they're all scared. I almost said terrified. They're worried about where they're going to sleep. They're worried about getting arrested. They're worried about getting in trouble with the authorities.
Yeah, obviously, this is true. Particularly when you're outside, you're more vulnerable, and people who are housed also are afraid of losing their jobs, of getting kicked out of off of their housing, and losing the privileges that they have, the small amount of apparent security that we've gotten, I being one of the housed people myself. You're tuned to Free Radio, housed or unhoused, and maybe we're not broadcasting gay. I'm not sure what's cooking. Maybe a helpful listener either on the internet or a psychic listener, perhaps, if we're not broadcasting, will call in 427-3772 and let me know if anybody can actually hear us out there. I think this is really a valuable conversation, and so I'm going to encourage people to review it through computers if they can find one. I think they're probably available in the library somewhat. What's the computer services like for homeless people in the Santa Cruz Library?
Well, you have about an hour that you can use the computer. Now, I've been told there's ways around that, which I don't guess I'll divulge over the air. But
coming with a pseudonym and perhaps wearing a mask of some kind. Go ahead.
But my major complaint is that you can't upload or download, which meant I couldn't really do much of anything. I couldn't do anything to my website. I couldn't send email. I couldn't really do much of anything. You know, they're there, and you can use them for an hour, and you have internet access, and so I think that's great, you know. And every morning, or when I was using them, and I did use them for a while before I got my laptop, There was a line outside the door when they opened the library of people waiting to get in, and there was a race for the computers every morning. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Is that still the case? Or?
I haven't had to do that lately, so I have my own computer now, my own laptop.
So some of the issues that you've raised have to do with, for example, I raised this issue myself on Free Radio because I'd heard about it from you. At MH Ken, a mental health kind of drop-in place out on, what is it, Soquel?
Is it yeah, it's Soquel and Cayuga, I believe.
Right, and where the church burned down. I guess they're having some sort of alternate place out there now.
Yeah.
You described for me briefly, and I think I read it first online, how you found that because you had recently medicated yourself with marijuana, they didn't like the way you smelled, or they didn't like the fact that you had that it happened to you, and you got ousted. Is that accurate? I mean, run that by us. What happened?
Well, what happened is I think it was like 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning when they're usually not open, and I was actually there to get cigarettes up the street. And wanted to stop and sit down and smoked a joint. And shortly after I'd finished, a minute or two, a few seconds,
Inside the building or
no, outside, sitting outside at the table. There's a little picnic table in front. And someone walked up and said, "I smell marijuana, you have to leave." And so I told him what I thought of it and left and haven't been back. I did receive a call. They had asked me to sign up for smoking cessation classes. And so I just said, okay, fine. They said something about a $15 coupon at the grocery store. And so they called me up and asked me if I was interested in that, and I just told them how lucky they were. I had just smoked a joint, and no, I wasn't interested, and mentioned the incident to them. They said that wasn't very nice and suggested I talk to the director about it. But
the smoking cessation offer was from an MH Can person?
Oh, yeah. They have all kinds of groups there.
And they're talking about marijuana smoking cessation?
No, I don't believe so. Cigarette smoking.
Cigarette smoking.
But
you are a cigarette smoker as well.
Yeah, but there had been, people had expressed concerns to me. They were afraid that I was going to cause them to lose their federal funding. That was the concern expressed to me. And also, they have people in recovery there, and I guess that if I'm there, they're going to go out and use drugs. I don't know. That's
in essence, they're denying you, a man with a disability, the right to use a medication which your doctor has told you that you should use, right?
Not just one doctor, but a number of them. And I have fought very hard for this for 10 years.
So what victories have you had in this regard that you might want to pass on to us?
Well, the first one was getting a recommendation for a psychiatric disability for cannabis. That was almost impossible for the first few years after 215 passed. Let's see, what other victories? I had criminal cultivation charges dismissed in San Bernardino County.
How much were you cultivating?
20 plants. It was a rotation. I had 8 plants in bloom, and the rest were clones. And
what year?
That was 2 years ago.
Wow.
It's sort of the beginning of what got me here. My landlady called the sheriff. She staged the scene, called the sheriff, had me raided. And then when I got back, this was the day before Thanksgiving, and Lanny Swerdlow, who has the Marijuana Anti-Prohibition Project down in Palm Springs, an excellent organization, which at their weekly meetings has more members than L.A. Normal and is much more active, came up with $10,000 cash on Thanksgiving to get me out of Cucamonga.
The jail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I got back, my landlady had posted a 3-day quit. And so I had to spend my time fighting to keep a roof over my head and fighting criminal charges. And the criminal charges were dismissed. The eviction, the unlawful detainer, was dismissed. And I considered that quite a victory. But she did file a second unlawful detainer. In the meantime, I couldn't find anywhere else to live. I'd been in the newspapers and on TV. And she was successful with a second. I think that due process was denied, but I can't get anyone to take the case. I also, though you asked me what victories, those are the things that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. What kind of allies have you found in your struggles? You mentioned one, the group in Los Angeles.
Yeah. They're a mixed bag. They're all very human. Dennis Perone comes to mind, and he was my first introduction to medical marijuana and to the club in San Francisco, and he is the most amazing person.
Dennis is one of the authors of Proposition 215, a longtime fighter against the drug war, and a man who's had had a club open of a very kind of relatively free and easy nature, or maybe I don't know much about the rules about it around his club. He was busted by the feds, I guess, very quickly after that.
Yeah, actually, I was busted a month before he was. This was a different court case. And then the club was busted a month later, and my arrest was in conjunction with the club. Not related, really, but because I was a member, and they called me a ringleader.
An agitator, a ringleader, and, of course, a terrorist. We're talking with Craig Canada. You're tuned to Free Radio, maybe, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Call-in number here, and we haven't heard any callers, so let's get with it, you guys and gals. 427-3772. There's a number of local advocates for medical marijuana or decriminalization of marijuana. There's Valerie Corral's WAM, which has a small group. I've given poor Valerie a lot of grief over the last 5 years for not standing up for the other 95% of the medical marijuana users, where she apparently has favored status. Everybody else has not had access to a club until last summer, when finally Lisa Molyneux's Greenway Club was opened in the Harvey West after some pressure. And Rotkin, instead of our then mayor, now a council member, instead of changing the law that has, in essence, banned clubs from opening, they made an exception in Molyneux's case. We're going to hear an interview with Lisa either today or on Sunday, depending on when I get to it. So that's coming up. But what about people like the Corrals, WAM? What about Andrea Tischler, Compassion Flower Inn? What about the people with the tax and regulate medical, not just medical marijuana? They're trying to, and have in fact filed with the city attorney, an initiative encouraging, asking voters to vote in November for the city police to make marijuana their lowest priority. What kind of support have you found? What about Mike Rotkin, our shadow mayor? Has he come forward and express concern that you have been denied services because of the use of a beneficent herb?
Well, I called one city council person and I sent an email to all of them when I was told that I couldn't sleep with the church groups anymore. And
that was because?
Evidently, I'm not sick enough. I don't know. They told me I would go to the armory. This was, shortly after I went to the city council and told them I couldn't go to the armory and asked them for help. I actually broke down.
I think I remember. I may have been in the audience when you, or at least I think I heard that. This was at a December meeting, perhaps?
I think so. Something like that, yeah.
And you were very eloquent, and your quote, breakdown, your expression of emotion was even more so, as I recall.
Well, I was embarrassed by it.
Yeah, you should be ashamed. Try to be a real man, will you, Craig? Shut up and take it.
But, you know, you asked me about some of the other people in town. The one thing that comes to mind is I think that marijuana, I was amazed when I found out that this initiative hadn't already been done here, that marijuana wasn't the lowest priority already. I was totally amazed. Dennis did that back 15 years ago with Proposition P back in San Francisco. That was the first thing he did.
And it probably didn't have too much effect either, did it? I mean, I don't.
Well, certainly not for Dennis. He was shot after that.
Well, Santa Cruz Police Department is notoriously corrupt. See the use of force series in the Chronicle. It's amazing. Check it out. I'm starting to bring displays to the Wednesday evening street performers gathering, so you can check it out if you happen to come there every Wednesday between 6 and 10. That's SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, also known as Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement. But it's interesting, and of course, to me, it's no surprise, but it's, of course, typically hypocritical and infuriating that authorities who claim to be so liberal in our town, who claim that, for example, WAM will give away marijuana on the steps of the city hall in 2002, But when an individual with a diagnosed condition who has been struggling with this for decades and is successfully struggling tries to use a simple service, he's banned with the pretext that they'll deny us our federal funding, so we're not going to allow you as a disabled person to have the medication that you need and use.
What can I say? I agree.
That's, you know. Seems to be what's going down. I'm suspecting we don't have an audience out there other than the internet audience, if we have that. So, but if there's anybody out there who has any questions for Craig, you can call in at 427-3772, area code 831, for those of you who are outside the area, 831-427-3772. I'm going to roll into a couple of interviews. And actually, before I do that, why don't I do a little...
So are we being blocked? Is that what's going on here?
You know, I think it is rather that the DSL, according to this, is down. And that means that we're streaming, but this we're not going out as what we would normally do. And so it sounds more like fumbledy-bumbledy rather than
technical
any kind of
glitch.
I think so. But here's an interview that folks can listen to. Again, one of the many on the street that I run through. Check it out.
Michael, you've used the interface program's winter armory shelter.
That's correct.
How many times?
For the last probably 2 months.
And how is it?
Very stressful.
Tell me about it.
To start off, they get us out there, and we have to stand in a line, whether it's raining or not, with no cover over us, with sick. Some elderly and handicapped people out there happen to wait until the sarge of the armory or whomever deems it worthy, whether we come in or not. And then when we come in, we get...
How long is the line, that wait usually happen in line outside in the cold or the rain?
Usually about 30 minutes to an hour.
What's the reason for this long wait?
That's beyond me. I don't understand it. We're just told that's what the sergeant's...
What's his name, you know?
Perry, I believe.
He's a sergeant of the Army or of the...
He is of the Army, but National Guard of the Army.
Now, what time does this actually happen? This happens daily, right?
In the evening, yeah, every day.
What time in the evening, more or less?
We leave the Coral Street about 5, get there about 5:20, 5:30, and then the second bus goes through the same thing.
Now, are they waiting for the second bus, or are they waiting for something else?
Waiting for something else.
And what is that something else they're waiting for?
I don't know. I really don't. I can't tell you because there's nothing ever going on in there.
How many people come up in the first bus?
Around 45 sometimes.
And the second bus?
Anywhere from the same amount, 45 to 30.
And so they're two bus loads?
Yes, correct.
And how long between the interval when the first bus arrives and the second bus?
About, I'd have to say anywhere 45 minutes to an hour.
So if you're on the first load, you'll wait. If you're on the second load, you get in pretty quickly, or you have to wait longer?
Well, you have to. You'll wait a little bit longer if the first line hasn't made it all the way through after doing the searches. You wait a little bit longer because they don't want you walking beside each other while they're outside. Because when you get in there, you're allowed to go out and smoke, and they don't want you to walk by the fences. Actually, they took that rule out, and now I mention that, because they don't let us out to smoke till the second bus comes.
So,
forgot about that.
So the way it works is the bus picks you up at the ISSP at the shelter in Coral Street, and the administrative offices from which people are discouraged from being there during the day, except for doing specific functions, like doing laundry, picking up mail.
An epileptic is very a burden.
Epileptic,
yes, sir. That's very much a burden.
If you have an epilepsy, they wouldn't let you stay at the, they wouldn't let you hang out at the Coral Street open air shelter during the, at the Coral Street area.
Not unless I have a seizure that day. Not unless I've had a seizure that day.
I can arrange a daily seizure for you.
that'd be quite all right. I'm not really all pleasant about having a daily seizure, but I do have them very frequent, and there's days I do feel them coming on that I've still got to leave until something.
Have you applied for any kind of housing or indoor shelters?
Not here in Santa Cruz, but
how long have you been here?
I've been here about 3 months, but I also don't know how the facilities work around here with those situations.
Long waiting list families are furthest, and even the family shelter, I believe, I was told, was half full.
The street one that I am signed up for, I have been waiting for probably a week and a half, almost 2 weeks for.
Well, there's the River Street Shelter, there's the Page Smith Community House, there's the Family Shelter.
River Street Shelter, right there.
The monthly program. Again, I'm trying to understand how the emergency shelter works going up to the Armory. You get on the bus around 4 or 5.
The first bus leaves at 4, yes.
About a 10-minute trip up to the Armory.
No, 5. I'm sorry, 5 o'clock.
10-minute trip up to the Armory.
About 10, 15, anywhere around 20 minutes.
So you get up there about 5:20 or 5:30. The bus turns around and goes back for a second load.
Correct.
And then you stand in line.
Yes, until...
If it's raining or cold, you still stand outside?
Stand outside in the rain,
there's no protection?
No protection out there, no.
And the second bus comes up about 45 minutes later with more people, and then how long do you all wait?
Until they decide it's time for us to go in.
Are they usually letting people come in while the first bus is going to get the second group?
Yes.
So they do. So you aren't really waiting. They're processing you.
Pretty much, yes. And that's still outside in the rain.
But you say it may involve. Is your concern that they're taking a long time doing it, or that they don't have a shelter outside from the rain? Or both?
Both, really. Because they have to have people go through our stuff, search it, and make sure we don't have any silver, anything metal in there and stuff like that. But even if that process is happening, there's still a lot of people standing out there. They only let one person in at a time to do that for them. And then
how long does it take for the average person to be searched and then let in?
Well, anywhere from about 45 seconds to about probably 2 minutes, depending on how much gear they got.
Any other comments about the homeless services you want to bring up?
Nothing much about that right now. I'm sure if I had sit there and had more time to think about stuff that goes on.
I'll get back to you, and you can give us your update on this.
All right, no problem.
Thanks.
And I guess this will be a sort of an archived show situation. You may be on the internet listening to us at freakradio.org or listening to us after the fact. If so, you can certainly call in any comments to the show later during showtime. Show hours are 6 to 8 on Thursday evenings and 9:30 to 1 on Sunday morning to early Sunday afternoon. Or you can leave me a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'm going to do some playing now of some more street stuff, I think. And then we will see what we will see.
And it's about 5 to 1 on Monday the 20th, here in front of, not far from the bookshop Santa Cruz. We have a man playing piccolo, or flute actually. And earlier we've learned that Kim and others have gotten camping tickets for being at the county building, even though they were previously okay there and weren't really warned, apparently, based on the anecdotal story I got. In these freezing times, tickets add abuse to injury or insult to injury, whatever you will. Okay, we have a man gathering signatures outside New Leaf Market for four different petitions. You have a clock which reads 420. What's that about there, signature man?
Well, it's time to legalize hemp, cannabis, sativa, the sacred herb.
Wait a minute. Now, hemp can be grown in some places, and it can also be used for medicinal purposes. What exactly are you proposing?
Actually, this is a city initiative for making adult private use, cultivation, and sales of marijuana lowest priority for local law enforcement.
Right next to surveilling peaceful political protesters?
Where?
So, in other words, you're suggesting that a measure that Berkeley proposed 20 years ago and passed should be tried here. Why would it be more effective here than in Berkeley, which passed it in 1979?
I don't know that much about the Berkeley ordinance. This is patterned after one that passed in a year and a half ago in Oakland.
Measure Z?
Yes. Measure Z in Oakland.
Has it, in fact, impacted police performance in Oakland? Please give us an update.
I don't know. I'm not too familiar with exactly Oakland's state of police affairs. Although they do have some sort of committee, I believe. Mickey Norse would be able to help you out with that information.
I'm asking you, the man who's spending time, energy, and our energy getting this on the ballot without apparently knowing what's going on up in Oakland and whether it's been effective up there. Well, I expect you to do better, Mr. Signature Man.
Well, I do know that this would set up a committee to report biannually on the implementation of the law, and if citizens were... felt like this law wasn't being enacted, they could seek a writ of mandate from the court.
Uh-huh. Of course, they could do the same thing up in Berkeley or Oakland, I would imagine, and in Berkeley, of course, marijuana busts tripled in the 90s, and the attempt to stop that failed by one vote in the city council in spite of a law on the books which says apparently something similar to what your law says. So I'm hoping that you'll know more about this, and I also hope that people will sign your initiative. How many people have signed today?
I got a late start today. I've got a couple sheets so far.
I notice there does seem to be an abysmal lack of interest. What about that questionable merchant over there at Alfresco's? Is she signed up?
Not yet. I haven't asked her. But
I see. Well, she'd better if she knows what's good for her.
If you keep walking the mall, there's a couple more opportunities to sign.
I see. Opportunists, you say, getting signatures?
That too.
All right then. Thank you very much. We've been talking with
Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Is that Token Tim of 1996 fame?
That would work.
And again, hope to get some kind of useful update on what's actually happening in Berkeley, which has passed this measure 1973 and then again 1979 about lowest priority police enforcement for marijuana arrests. And nonetheless, police just went ahead and did whatever the hell they felt like, doubling and tripling arrests. And Chris Worthington, city council member up there we had on the air a week or two ago, admitted he couldn't pass this, I guess it's Safe and Compassionate Streets Act that he tried to pass, failed by one vote. And it wasn't clear whether the police have continued their crackdown on homeless people by using marijuana busts, which is, of course, what they have been doing, or at least have done here in the past couple of years along Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz. So, I looked at the city council agenda when it showed up in the library a couple hours ago. Nothing terribly exciting seems to be coming up at the February 28th, Tuesday afternoon and evening meetings. Again, I didn't delve into it very deeply, so I'll try to check it out again on Sunday when I come back, and hopefully I'll be able to actually broadcast to people. What a concept. What I have here is, however, something that might be useful for people who missed it, and that's probably most all of you. Perhaps mercifully, perhaps not. You may have heard of the linger for 10 minutes in a parking lot or garage and get a citation or even get arrested ordinance. That's coming up to the Downtown Commission and then probably to City Council, compliments of the Public Works Department. This ordinance originally was slated to be on a city council agenda in early January. A number of us complained about it loudly, specifically because the Downtown Commission, the city's advisory body that's supposed to examine it before it goes to city council, had not had a chance to look at it. So they said, okay, they gave it to the Downtown Commission. So we went to the Downtown Commission in January, and you're going to hear some of that meeting, and some of it you already heard. And if you go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, you'll be able to hear a somewhat crappy taped version of part of it. This is a much better version of the part you didn't hear that's relevant to this whole subject. And what happened to the Downtown Commission, you'll learn by listening to the tape, but it was a victory for us. And unfortunately, in this struggle, no victory is final. There is a proposed meeting of the Downtown Commission March 8th, special meeting, one that wouldn't normally be held, except they want to ram through this ordinance. At least staff member Matt Farrell, I suspect, has an interest in doing that. At least that's my inference from what he's doing in scheduling a special meeting of the Downtown Commission. He has not yet been able to muster a quorum, according to writer Becky Johnson, who has just written a story on this for the next issue of Street Spirit. Street Spirit, for those of you who don't know, is a homeless newspaper written by the American Friends Service Committee's crusading activist Terry Messman and other activists from around the Bay Area. And you can actually, you can sell this paper for a buck a copy and keep the proceeds. You can write for the paper. You can give reports. Give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will get back to you. It's only a voicemail, so don't expect to hear me, but I will try to reach you if you've got some kind of contact point. You can also, of course, call into the show for information. And we're also looking for a master vendor, somebody who wants preferably a housed person or somebody with a fairly sturdy car who doesn't mind being a target of possible police harassment, to distribute these papers. Anyway, the Downtown Commission is considering this nasty law, which hopefully will be, well, which will be showcased in the next issue of Street Spirit, which comes out in about a week and which will be around town on the streets. I've also written a letter to Good Times, the weekly, we have a phone call here, and so we're going to be playing the Downtown Commission. Let's see if, what the heck is happening here. Hi, you're in the studio with me here, sort of being archived and kind of on the air, maybe.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
Hey, this sounds like Paul Sanford, perhaps?
Yes, it is. How are you?
I'm good. Are you interested in trying a little interview now just for the historical record?
Well, I would say yes and no. My inclination is, if we're only, you know, I'm not planning on being able, just because I'm so busy, but I do want to accommodate you to do a lot of interviews in this period of time, you know, let's say this month or whatever. If you would be satisfied, I think it achieves sort of whatever your ends are best to do it once here, that archived, fine. But if you want to maximize and have it heard more, because I don't know if anybody's heard, how many people are going to hear it comparatively. Your idea seemed to make more sense. If we're just, I don't want to do it now archived and then go do something else live or more traditionally in a week or so.
Well, how about,
I'm so jammed up, but I'm trying hard to accommodate you.
No problem. How about a teaser? Why don't you tease us and then come on back?
Well, that's fine. If you want, I can. I'm waiting for a client right now. I can, like, a minute if you want to ask, a minute or two if you want to ask
All right.
A question now.
Paul
and then you'll
Sanford,
let me know. We'll reschedule otherwise.
You are an attorney, and you've also been to Washington and grilled Scott McClellan at the White House, and you're currently engaged in a legal battle with Michael Zwirling of radio station KSCO. Briefly, in 45 seconds, what's it all about?
Well, of course, I don't want, my lawyer would cream me if I discussed a lot of specifics about legal issues, but I'm suing Mr. Zwirling because he breached a contract with me, and he's been disparaging me and slandering me in hurtful ways. And I feel like I need to hold anyone who does mean-spirited things that damage people's reputations that aren't true should be held accountable. And sadly, I've come into conflict with this person, but I'm trying to stay calm and just have my day in court.
Paul,
Robert,
what's
our trial? We have a trial date set, and I'm breaking this story with you.
Great. When's the trial?
For July 27th.
And what's the public interest in this? Why should we care whether you and Zwirling get into a cat fight?
I don't know. I'm not promoting this. It's just no one wins generally in a lawsuit, and I'm not looking for attention. You asked me the question. I try to be responsive. I'm not out there looking for press for it. It's unfortunate when you're, but I, there's a business deal gone wrong that ended up going very wrong with me being silenced in a hurtful way, in an undemocratic way.
But wasn't the interest?
And that's, I'm not teasing it. I'm not promoting it.
Well, Paul,
people think it's a dramatic story.
Well, I
haven't done anything.
Let me interrupt you, Paul, because I think it did have an edge to it. I mean, I like Michael Zwirling as a person, nice guy, although his way he's treated broadcasters like Richard Quigley, who single-handedly brought down Sheriff Mark Tracy, in my view, in a real affirmation of the First Amendment, I thought was a public interest issue. And when you raised the issue of treason around the Valerie Plume case to Scott McClellan in the White House, and then you were cut off at the hip by Zwirling, who tried to discredit you, even though you had had an arrangement with him and you were a credentialed reporter there. Is that accurate?
Yes, I was credentialed by one of his stations to do news, and specifically to report from Washington and specifically from the White House. And it was never in dispute. There is no controversy. In terms of the Good Times, had a teaser cover about this guy and the controversy of how he got into the White House. I got into the White House by telling them the truth. I can't represent exactly how they vetted me. I told them the truth, and I wouldn't be so silly as a lawyer or a citizen to lie to the White House to sneak in.
And Paul, you raised a very important issue at the White House. Can you describe for us again the question you put to the White House press secretary?
Yeah, and I apologize. I only have a moment more to talk, but to the Cliff Notes version is I asked if the statute that the independent counsel and grand jury were investigating concerning Mr. Rove and the outing of a spy, whether that statute had been reviewed with sufficient specificity by the White House counsel or staff to determine whether someone breaking that particular law would be guilty of treason.
The idea
was they weren't taking any questions about the ongoing investigation, so I asked about the underlying statute. Of course, they didn't answer the question,
but
that's the nature of White House press conferences today.
Paul, thank you for talking with us. We'll try to schedule you again either for next week around 7:30, or if you find time on Sunday, maybe we can get you in then.
Yeah, you know what would be fun also that I think might be more equally productive perhaps is if we could eventually figure out a way, and I could even lend you the equipment maybe or figure out a way with you to do it. We could do a more thoughtful approach sometime where you had 45 minutes or an hour and we could touch on you know, the Pledge of Allegiance, and we could touch on John Maurer, and we could touch on the sleeping band, and we could touch on my matters and so forth, and then put them out in clips or something. It'd be nice if we could do something more thoughtful and longer.
I think one hour
of me would be too much for anyone.
Not at all. I'm tough. I can take it. Paul, we'll do it.
That's just a helpful suggestion. Maybe we can get something that you could break it up and build some of those around some of these subtopics.
Maybe we get Michael Zwirling to buy ads.
Hi, Robert. It's wonderful to hear from you, and I'm sure we'll do a longer, more traditional spot sometime in the future.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. And Paul Sanford is a local attorney, one of the few who's willing to take civil rights cases for homeless people, some homeless people, not a lot of them. He's very selective, and unfortunately, as well. But he took the Camp Paradise case, the case of the people who were sleeping by the river, who actually set up a homeless-run campground in 2002 is when it happened. He took the case that he was an advisor on the Pledge of Allegiance case for Michael Newdow, the atheist who didn't want, not want his children subjected to a compulsory God is my shepherd type pledges, under God stuff in the classrooms. He also essentially won the case, and we'll be sending back to city council the case of the homeless John Maurer, who had a little sign in his hat, fuck the pigs, police, meaning police, after police had harassed him repeatedly on Pacific Avenue and was given a bogus ticket for, quote, panhandling with profane language under one of the city's so-called downtown ordinances. One of the special poisonous group of ordinances passed by the Rotkin Matthews Council back in 1994 and made worse in 2002 and 2003. So he's got a lot of stuff that he's talking about, plus this issue about whether he got fair treatment from AM mogul Michael Zwirling, who has this huge KSCO station off in the boonies. Still in the studio with me is Craig Canada, sipping his double gulp. And, you know, if any of you have some psychic awareness that we're on the air here and want to call in, hey, you can do so. You can chat with us. Now what I'm going to do, however, is give Craig a chance to say anything he wants to say, because he may have something he wants to say. He may not. Anything you want to say, Craig?
You asked me about the law, and I mentioned Section 3.5 of the State Constitution. You also have Proposition 215. You also have SB 420, which I think is 11368 point something.
We're talking about medical marijuana now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you also have the UNRRA Civil Rights Act and several other civil rights acts in California. Inland County's legal services contested my unlawful detainer up to the San Bernardino Supreme Court on the basis that UNRRA requires that reasonable accommodation be made for disabled people, and that it was reasonable for me to grow cannabis. And one of my points and one of my contentions is that I do not think it is unreasonable in Santa Cruz, of all places, to accommodate medical marijuana patients. That's supported by UNRRA.
How about lawyers? Have you found a lawyer in town who's willing to take a case?
I haven't looked in this town. I have looked. I've spoken to David Nick. I did turn down Margolin because of an experience the Victors had. The Victors are activists down in, they live in Temecula. And LaVon has multiple sclerosis, and Martin has ocular disability, an eye condition, so they're both medical marijuana patients. And they had Margolin as their attorney. They got busted. And they had a bad experience with him, which I don't really want to divulge the details of here. But I decided not to go with him. I see he was Wham's attorney on their appeal to the Supreme Court. But what I have been told is that I have a good civil case and that I would win if I could...
Against...
San Bernardino County for busting me.
Any concerns about Santa Cruz County, what's happening up here?
Well, yes and no. I noticed that recently Wham has joined the city in a lawsuit. I don't know the details. Not a lawsuit. Well, yeah, a lawsuit. I don't know the details of. They're refiling their appeal against the Supreme Court. And the basis on this is a Tenth Amendment basis. And their contention is that they cannot serve their medical marijuana patients. And I'm assuming that my situation is a part of this, or if they win, it would remedy my situation. I believe the city is contending that because of federal law, they cannot house me and they cannot give me access to public services. Not me specifically.
Have you talked to any council members who are knowledgeable about this?
No, I haven't. As I said, I contacted them several times. I guess I've been reluctant to. I'm not sure where I stand with them. I'm not sure if they're for me or against me.
Oh,
quite
they're
frankly.
For you. Don't make any mistake. Actually, they would like to posture as being for you and then try to do as little as possible unless it's easily done. However, Mayor Matthews did grant me an interview a week ago. We played it on the air. And I believe she voted, I'm not sure she voted in favor of or against the medical marijuana application of Lisa Molyneux. People like Emily Riley might be a person to go to. She's pretty horrible. I call her Smiley Riley because of the anti-homeless laws she's championed or supported or at least voted for in the past. But insofar as getting information about this lawsuit, either Rotkin or Riley, probably Rotkin, maybe Coonerty, could give you more information. And in terms of concerns about agencies discriminating against you because of use of medical marijuana, I would be curious if you want to be a guinea pig and if you want to get a report from them as to what their reaction is to this, whether they're willing to do anything. And then come back to us here at Free Radio, or me, I should say, and pass on to listeners just what's going on with this. At least we can keep the community informed as to just how hypocritical our community is. Or let's hopefully not. Maybe you'll actually get some action, and maybe we can tell a good story for once.
you know, that would be nice. I'd like to do that. My first thought is I'm still adjusting to being homeless and now living in a tent. And just the most simple, basic things are so time-consuming that I really have very little time to do much of anything. Most of my time is spent taking care of the necessities and figuring out how to do it, you know, how to find it. Where are the restrooms at 3 in the morning? That sort of thing.
Restrooms? What restrooms?
Yeah, you have a point.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there is, I guess there are porta-potties open in the parking lot of right behind Logos Bookstore, where Food Not Bomb served next to the farmer's market. However, under the new 10-minute law, you'd better keep your craps short. Is that clear? Yeah.
That's amazing. That's just amazing.
What I'm going to play for you now, Craig, since you're the only one in the studio and the only one who's hearing this directly, hope maybe some others are listening, and this will be archived, is some of the Downtown Commission's discussion of the downtown the proposed downtown ordinance about this so-called, this 10-minute loitering deal. And I think, I actually think I want to play a little more of both the public testimony and the...
You know, I listened to your show last week talking about this, and one of the most frustrating things about being homeless is that you have to constantly keep moving. That is just deadening. It kills the soul.
Souls and the heels as well, I would imagine.
That's true.
Yeah. We get from one line to the next, right? Let's see if I'm on the right tape here. Wouldn't that be nice if I were?
Four, the Downtown Commission makes recommendations to the
right tape, wrong speed. well, we've got a few kinks to work out here. Here we go. I think this is the right tape. It better be. That was dead air, folks. I apologize for that. We're going to hear a little bit of the Capitol Steps, and then we're going to return to our friends in the Downtown Commission from a meeting of 2 weeks ago on the issue of what to do about these intractable homeless people hanging out in the parking lots and the parking garages.
I'm a private detective. My father named me Hugh. My mother named me Jim. Last name, Bissell. So my friends call me Hugh Jimbissell. Times had been tough. The recession had hit me hard. I was working less than a West Virginia tooth fairy. Every day, my answering machine contained fewer messages than John Kerry's campaign, and my 537 emails all seemed to suggest I was a sexually undersized male whose mortgage rate was too high. It's okay, I'm through with that online stuff anyway. I ordered some Viagra from an email I got, and I don't want to say I got ripped off, but when the package arrived, it contained two popsicle sticks and some duct tape. Anyway, my bank account was looking leaner than Callista Flockhart on a hunger strike. But all that changed in an instant. I got a phone call I'll never forget. It was the White House, and they had an assignment for me. They wanted me to find out who was responsible for that whole Iraqi prison scandal at Abu Ghraib. Seems their investigation was moving slow, too slow. Slower than Michael Jackson leaving a Boy Scout jamboree. Give the guy a break. I hear he's down to 2 packs a day. Don't turn on me now. We got a long way to go. A couple of disgruntled weeblos out there, I see. Anyway, this was the kind of case that could turn my career around, and I was going to pounce on it like a white tiger on an effeminate German magician. Relax, his condition's been upgraded from critical to fabulous. Anyway, they said they'd have a secret operative meet me at 1100 hours. While I was waiting for him, I took some time out to look at these photos, and I gotta tell you, I was shocked. I was horrified. I hadn't seen such examples of nudity and sexual degradation since high school. And I'd been homeschooled. Just then there came a knock on the door, and when I answered, there he was, my operative. Brand new Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, disguised as a clown. Now, I wanted to let him in, but there was something a little bit funny about him. Because he was disguised as a clown, see? No. Keep up with me now. Yeah, I was suspicious. I was more suspicious than Hillary Clinton learning that her husband's book signing trip to Stockholm coincided perfectly with the International Cheerleading Conference. But it was Gonzalez, all right, and it turns out he was pretty ticked off for taking the blame for these memos, you know the ones, concerning the administration's policy on torture. Gonzalez thought the whole mess was politically motivated. But who would have the motivation? Who wanted to see this administration out of office that badly? Well, I looked at the photos again and then took a wild guess. I don't know, Iraqi prisoners? When he got tired of kicking me in the face and unhooked the electrodes, I realized that wasn't the answer he was looking for. Now, Gonzalez blamed the press. After all, the press had reported that the whole scandal was due to this culture of intimidation at the Justice Department. Now Alberto said he wanted a list of names of anyone accusing him of intimidation and to know whether or not they owned a puppy. Anyway, we were getting nowhere. The whole investigation was looking useless. It was looking as useless as buying a 1-year anniversary gift for J-Lo. But just then I had one last thought. Hey, politically motivated, what about the Democrats? After all, it could be argued the whole scandal was a finely timed, well-coordinated, astute, unified political move. So naturally, the Democrats couldn't possibly have been involved.
And that was 4 more years in the Bush Leagues. Detective Story by Michael Forrest. You're tuned to freakradio.org, and hopefully we'll soon be tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz as we get back online. Now I'm going to play you some notes, I should say, the actual recording of the Downtown Commission, which, at least parts of it that are relevant to subjects I'm concerned about. In the studio with me is Craig Canada, who may have some commentary, too, on this. There are two items 3 and 4 coming up, which they will be talking about. This is the advisory body to the Santa Cruz City Council, which considers laws that impact the downtown, made up of, the commission is made up of merchants, residents, it has some staff from the city, and as I mentioned before, it's currently considering another anti-homeless law, which will be talked about on this tape. Their next meeting will probably be March 8th, if Matt Farrell can scare up a quorum. And so be advised, that's 8:30 in the morning, so get ready to set your alarm clock if you want to come in and try to stop this anti-homeless law. Let's hear some of the Downtown Commission. We've heard some of this before in a somewhat more indecipherable version. It actually was decipherable, but it was with difficulty. And as I mentioned before, an article will be coming out on this issue in Street Spirit within the week.
Okay, let's go on to the next item of business, and that's a downtown ordinance review. The recommendation is that the Downtown Commission discuss the Downtown Ordinance Subcommittee report and decide on any required actions. We have Jim that's going to give us a brief summary of our study and suggestions for next steps.
Yeah, just a reminder that last time we spoke with a number of Julie spoke with Dan Flippo from the Santa Cruz Police Department and Ryan Coonerty from the City Council and got the impression from them that there were no significant issues that needed to be addressed. I spoke with a number of downtown businesses and got a number of criticisms and support for the ordinances. A number of people said that they were very appreciative and it had made a significant improvement downtown. And also there was a kind of consistent impression that the ordinances were inconsistently enforced. I also spoke with a number of musicians from downtown, as did Kathy, but I don't have her notes with me now. But again, there was a notion of inconsistency and kind of an overzealousness in that the ordinances were too strict, more strict than most other towns. So that was that's kind of an overview of what we talked about last week. After our last meeting, the commission requested that we talk to Dan before we presented anything to council. Dan Flippo from the police department, and Julie and I met with him, and he pretty clearly addressed each of the problems that we had seen. As far as the inconsistency, he suggested that the police simply can't be everywhere and need to be notified by businesses if they do have a complaint. Also, there's obviously a lack of education on the part of the merchants that, for example, if somebody has a sign in a cup and it's sitting on their lap or on their clothing, then it's perfectly legal for them to stay all day long, as long as they're 14 feet away from a building. And I think a lot of merchants aren't aware of that. As far as the musician's impression that the ordinances are more restrictive than any other town, Dan suggested that that's simply not true, and that the ordinances are really designed to support street musicians and make it comfortable for them while still dealing with the difficult issues. And again, when the ordinances are not consistently enforced, he suggested that we didn't want the police officers standing over people on the street and waiting with a watch for them to leave in a timely manner. And that, you know, when they ask people to move along, they're generally respected, and that's not a problem. There was one complaint that an officer misrepresented the truth of the law in asking that any citizen can have a street performer arrested if they cause a disturbance. And Dan said that's actually state law and absolutely true. In terms of the aggressive handling by officers, he said that in general he feels the officers are very polite and friendly and informative. And of course, there are times when they've had a difficult day and might be a little bit aggressive, but that's natural. So that's basically what we got from Dan. And I was left after the meeting with him feeling like I was fairly clear, and that maybe there was not such a need to address the council directly. That was my personal opinion. I was not able to complete the letter that we requested that we write to the council that we would approve today, so I don't have that for you.
Just a question.
Joe?
In the retelling of the history and your own personal experiences, would you say it's fair to categorize that not only the merchants are... you made a statement about the merchants not having full awareness of what the ordinances are and how they work. Isn't that pretty well true of the performers, the consumers, everybody in general, not just the merchants in one segment? I think everybody needs more information for
Absolutely.
What actually they are.
Sure.
Because when there's people saying that there's uneven enforcement, their own interpretation of what is supposed to happen may or may not be accurate to what the ordinances actually say.
No, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of what Dan Flippo said, that they spend a lot of time downtown educating folks about the ordinances. That's really his focus. focus. He also said there's been improvements because there's consistency in the people that are downtown, including him. So people know them and they have the opportunity to, certainly the merchants have the opportunity to request visits and discussions about the ordinances. So overall, I guess my sense was it's pretty good news that the ordinances are performing well. And Jim and I talked about if the commission wants to move forward with just sharing this information with council, that we would do that in the context of a annual check-in meeting. Jim and I or another commissioner could go and meet with them. And so that's, I think, what we want to ask you today is if that would, do you think that would be a good idea rather than doing a more formal letter, which is what we voted on at the last meeting?
I would think that based on your report from your experience with Dan and everything, that it sounds to me like an annual check-in. The whole purpose of this was to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. And at least from my point of view, it seems like you guys have done a thorough investigation on a limited amount of time to get feedback from all different segments. And if your contention is that, you know, you want to draft some sort of a letter that, that gives that report of what you just said to us and bring that to us, to approve, and then take that to, you know, a meeting of the mayor or something like that. Isn't that what we talked about doing before?
Yeah.
I think that's a reasonable course of action here, because there was no red flag that came up or smoking gun or anything like that. I think the situation is one of education would be the best simplest way to get people informed on what the problems are that they perceive to be problems. So do we need a move, any kind of a motion to...
Don't look at me. I'm not chair anymore.
That's right.
I agree with Joe that it, although it seems like it would be simple enough to take to a meeting, it might be good for the council also to have something officially that lists what we've done and what the results were.
See what steps we took and all that. And I would think if you want to draft a letter like that, bring it to us for approval, then you guys arrange a meeting. I think that'd be great.
I'm fine with that, and it seems like we don't need another motion since we had one last time. It's just one more meeting to get through.
Do we have anybody in the audience who wants to talk?
Any members of the public that would like to comment?
Yes. Robert Patton, once again, Human Rights Organization. I would like to, at this time, pass out what is our basic pamphlet or a basic flyer around our concerns with the human rights, with the just a few things I'd like to mention. And I would indeed encourage this committee to continue giving your information to the city council. One of the reasons we're here speaking at this time is the city council, the mayor, the former mayors, current mayor, and all of the city council members do not communicate with us, will not meet with us, and do not bring any of this stuff for the downtown ordinances up to the public at the city council meetings. So we're here because this is one of the only places we can speak on these issues, the only places we hear them talked about and presented to the public. It's a frightening thing for the Santa Cruz City Council to delve into this. One, I would like to find out how to request the reports or the documentation that particularly Mr. Brown was talking about, because that's not listed in any of the information you can get off of the internet. And some of the things we're mostly concerned or really concerned about is in Santa Cruz, if you ask a citizen for money, a fellow citizen for money, you can go to jail. If you use a blanket, you can go to jail. If you sit too long, you can go to jail. These items we feel, we believe these ordinances violate various provisions of the Bill of Rights. In these times of ever-widening economic inequality, the poor are not the only victims. We have a sense that our community, civil society, is under attack. So I'd like to have you take a look at those pamphlets, and that's in general. We covers all the current city council, downtown ordinances. Thanks for your
Thank
time.
You, Mr. Patton.
Bernard Klutzner, Human Rights Organization. And I don't think everything is really going well with these downtown ordinances at all. For instance, like there's a lot less benches now than we did have prior to setting up these downtown ordinances. That's for one thing. Number two, I observed, police, I'm being kind using that word. I would prefer to use another word, but I'd probably bias myself if I did. These police they don't treat poor people, people with different dress standards, they don't treat them good on the mall by any chance. I don't think merchants have the right, to make the mall, their own property. All they do is pay for the storefronts, not for the street, not for the sidewalks. Why are you guys allowing, the merchants to have so much power? That's what you're doing. That's what I heard, and the police is there to protect everybody, not just merchants. They're there to protect all kinds of people, homeless people, but they don't. This is truth. And I would hope, that you guys would do some of your own private investigations, like hang out at the mall, with street people and musicians, that kind of thing. So that's kind of my case, It's kind of like on the other side. So I'd like you guys to look into that. Thank you.
You very much for your comments. Okay. On to item number 4. Use of downtown parking lots and garages. The recommendation is that the Downtown Commission recommend that the City Council adopt an ordinance defining the proper use of parking lots and garages, specifically for the purpose of parking vehicles and bicycles. Matt, do you have a staff report?
Just a short one. This item is being brought forward to the Commission at the recommendation of our maintenance staff and the City Police Department. We're having an increasing problem with people loitering in the garages and complaints from people who are monthly parkers in these facilities about especially women not feeling safe. And so in talking with the police and our maintenance staff, one of the tools that they suggest would be helpful is to clarify that the purpose of using these parking lots is to basically park bicycles and other vehicles and set a time limit on the amount of time you can spend in a lot parking your vehicle. So we're bringing forward a recommendation for a 10-minute time limit for parking vehicles so that police officers and maintenance people can ask people to leave the facility, and if they don't leave within 10 minutes, they're subject to a citation. And we haven't done this in the past because we haven't been confronting the same kind of problems that we're confronting now. And unfortunately, there are some people in the downtown who aren't good citizens and who are engaged in behavior that is not appropriate. And so we're trying to come up with strategies to deal with this problem.
Is there discussion? Joe?
Two quick questions. This would apply to the covered garages as well as the open lots?
It would cover both the garages and the parking lots.
Okay. And then the second question is, any precedent in any other community that you know of?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Just asking.
Jerry?
Has the city attorney been involved in writing this?
Actually, the city attorney drafted
this. He drafted the...
Okay. Because
that's the second page. Okay. Other questions, June?
I don't understand this exception.
The idea behind the exception is if you have a special event permit for a parking lot, you would be able to use the parking lot for another purpose besides parking vehicles.
Oh, okay.
That's the intention of the exception. For instance, if Farmer's Market is happening, then clearly that's
an allowed activity because they have a permit from the city for that use. Or if there's a parade downtown and people are using the lot for a staging area for a parade. The second exception has to do with people engaged in maintenance of the facility who, you know, obviously need to be in the facility longer than 10 minutes in order to do their job.
Okay. Okay. Other discussion?
No.
Terry?
Do you think, this is kind of an unusual ordinance that will probably see lots of opposition. What do you think? Do you think there's a chance that this can be passed by the council, or should we not think about that?
I'm not sure if this can be passed. Our problem is that we have some issues in trying to manage these facilities, and in trying to represent the interests of the people who I work with and do this job. I'm bringing forward this policy option because I feel like I need to try and help my people do their job. And
So it may change.
It has changed. The nature of this work has changed. And so I don't think it's fair not to reflect that problem. And
I have a question, Matt. So this includes all the surface lots and the garages in the downtown business district, is that
exactly
right? What would be the process for issuing a citation?
Well, most citations would only be issued by police officers, and what would happen is, I don't really know exactly what the police officer would do. My understanding of the way this would work would be that the officer would probably give a person a warning, and if they didn't leave, they would be cited.
So staff then in those garages or others then would be in charge of calling the police to report.
Right, which is what they currently do if people
behavior
won't
that's
leave.
Not appropriate.
The problem becomes is you ask somebody to leave and then they go out of the facility and they come right back. And, you know, there's no real way to manage that behavior under the current ordinance.
Sheila. And then Joe.
Which one, Joe?
Sheila and then Joe.
Okay. I can understand from the complaints we've heard about the garages, but I haven't heard as much complaints coming about the lots. Why did you include the lots?
Well, our experience is that if you have a certain problem in one location and you start to address that problem in that location, then the problem's going to move to another location. And so what we're asking for is kind of standard policy so we can apply that evenly in all locations.
And would this affect, for instance, the people who gather in the parking lot next to the farmer's market? They wouldn't be able to do that during the farmer's market.
I'm not sure how it would affect that behavior.
Well, because they're out in the parking lot. They're standing out there.
It might be able to use, I don't know the answer. I don't know exactly how the police would interpret that particular form of congregation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what we're trying to deal with is issues of people hanging out in garages for extended periods of time. There's an association between those behaviors and vandalism of vehicles. And we're trying to come up with a strategy on how to manage that. That's the main focus, you know, both our staff and the police department we're talking about.
Is this hard for you?
Joe and then Jim?
Two quick points. At the task force meeting, it did come out that there were some problems in the open lot to deal with. We don't hear about everything, but as Matt said, there were problems.
What kind of problems?
Well, there's handicap lots was piled full of garbage that if somebody had pulled in there, they couldn't use the space and all that. There was a couple of reports of that kind of thing, which is why they needed to use a uniform approach to everything. We installed a change machine on Pacific Avenue at the corner of Elm and Pacific, by Union Grove, because there were a large group of people there
taking over that corner and just using it as a place to hang out all day long. And there were complaints from people on the street. So once that change machine was installed, those people then moved into the parking lot at the corner of Elm and Cedar Street. And they're now hanging out all day in that parking lot. And it's becoming a problem for the people who use that lot and are adjacent to that facility. So, you know, that's why we feel it's important to have kind of a consistent policy, because, you know, these issues of congregation and people just taking over public space, I mean, not just sitting there for an hour, but like taking over a corner and just being there every day, all week, you know, just basically turning it into their personal living room is a problem downtown. You know, because it's shared public space. It doesn't belong to any of us.
Jim?
Second point. It would be my hope, on the surface of this, it looks rather restrictive. It would be my hope in forwarding a recommendation to encourage the debate on this issue, because, A, Public Works needs a tool to help them deal with new problems. This, as Matt said, may not be the exact tool, but this could be the beginning of the discussion that would lead to the thing that would help them address this problem. So in looking it over and discussing those things, my thoughts would be to recommend this, because it would start the discussion.
Jim?
I just wanted to address Sheila's point. It seems like my conversations with Dan, the police will respond if people complain. So if nobody complains about what goes on, but it certainly could become a problem if people did complain about the gatherings at the farmers market.
Question, Matt. So what would this tool do that your staff couldn't do in the garage?
What it does now is it gives people the option
behaviors.
To tell someone, listen, you know, you have to leave the garage and you have to leave within 10 minutes or else I'm going to have to call the police.
And that can't happen now with staff?
It's not as clear what the process is for asking people to leave. Because the definition of trespass and loitering is not as specific.
Sure.
Staff can't cite. So there's no teeth if staff ask them to move. They move, they come back, or they come back. Just like the downtown hosts have no authority to write citations, the police can do that. This would give a little bit more strength to the opportunity to address the problem. It'd be no different than you or I asking somebody to move. They're going to ignore us. So the problem's not going to be solved.
But the steps that a citizen could go through is to call the police, right, and they can respond. But you're saying there's no tool for them to cite them at this point.
Well, we don't want our maintenance people to be citing people for violations. What we want to do is give them tools to be able to tell people, hey, you know, this is what the city rules are about use of this facility, and, you know, you need to be ready to leave, you know, within the time established by the city for use of the lot.
And June?
It looks like someone can't be there unless they're parking their bike or their car, period, for any amount of time. Is that correct?
10 minutes after 10 minutes.
Well, you can be there for 10 minutes to park your vehicle.
But if you're not parking your car, you're not supposed to be there at all.
Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Well, people walk through and there's a shortcut or...
Well, that's less than 10 minutes, so... I mean, the only time that I've ever... I mean, I've sat in my car and talked on my cell phone for 30 minutes in my car, but somehow I don't think that would ever be a problem.
Is there other discussion?
Yeah.
Sheila.
Well, first of all, it sounds like it says, whether driver or passenger, you can't remain more than 10 minutes, so there's no way anybody could ever prove you weren't a passenger.
Yeah, that's true.
You know. And my other comment is, I have no problem with seeing the reason for this. And, I mean, I think that the problem has gotten worse. I always feel like it's a real careful balance, and, you know, to make sure that we're not, you know, restricting anybody too much. So, but I do agree with Joe's idea that perhaps in sending this on to the city council, we can send with it the fact that we recognize that we're trying to balance between the concerns of different groups of people, and that we feel the problem is desperate enough that this action may need to be taken, so that we're giving them a clear sense of, you know, that it does involve balancing the civil rights of different groups of people to make this kind of decision.
Other discussion? The members of the public that would like to comment on this issue, please restrict your comments to about 3 minutes, please.
I don't know if I'll even take 3 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, to me, it's that's another bad strike against homeless and poor people. Think about it. Who mostly would hang out in parking lots or garages? You know, most people wouldn't. It would be people, you know, that have no place to go, you know, that need a little warmth, you know, that have bad appearances that Matt probably doesn't like, you know. Just another blow, you know. Don't do this. Don't do this at all. We don't want more poor people. And if we can give them tickets, you know, so they're going to do community service or they're not going to show up, you're going to have warrants, just loading up the court, it solves nothing. What you people need to do, really, you know, is have places for homeless people to go. They only have one place that I'm aware about during the daytime, and they're being kicked out of there now. The most part, I don't know if you know about that, Ken Cole is trying to chase them off during the day. He wants them to go somewhere else. Yeah. You know, we have specific laws. If people in garages, you know, are doing crimes, we have a million laws on the books, and that's okay. You know, I don't think that homeless people should be committing crimes, but it sounds like this law, you know, it's about appearances. You know, you're just sitting there and yakking to each other, you know, and that's going to be real strange to a lot of people. But that's too bad, you know. We all have our own appearances. A lot of people don't like my appearance at all. I'm a professional tax accountant. And I don't carry the image. And I've lost a lot of business because of that, but that's the way it is. So don't do this. Think of some real, go to the roots of the problem, and that homeless and poor people, you know, need some real spaces that they can hang out, you know, and feel welcome. This is the way to go, you know, not just clobbering them. You know, you're just part of the orchestra. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure to sign in on the sign-in sheet as well, Barnett, if you would.
Where is this? Oh, right there.
Thank you.
I'll need a space for you. Hi, my name is Terry Thomas. It's actually a question more than a comment.
Could you restate your name, please?
Terry Thomas.
Terry Thomas. Thank you.
It seems to me that, as this gentleman said, that just hanging out is a little uncomfortable. I park in that garage. I like the Walnut Street Cafe. And, that, you know, people there isn't the big thing. It's the fact that they piss in the parking lot, and it stinks like crazy. I think that's the real issue, getting right down to it. And there's a law against that. So it sounds to me like what it is an enforcement problem. You don't need more laws. You've got to spend a couple bucks to get a duty officer down there to... Plus, people are peeing in the parking lot. We got plenty of laws. Don't need any more. Just need to enforce the ones you have, I think. Homeless or not, you shouldn't be peeing in public. Or maybe, on the other hand, I don't know if you've ever been downtown and been on the other end of Pacific Garden Mall, away from Bookshop Santa Cruz. and had to go to the bathroom and not want to go to a bar to pee. You know, I mean, you got a hell of a run to get there. There's just nothing to do. And if you're homeless, even Bookshop Santa Cruz doesn't really welcome you that way. So it's a tough issue. I think it's more serious than just chasing people out of a garage. It's a bigger problem. This is just one aspect of a bigger problem. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Robert Patton here for the Human Rights Organization again. I would at this time like to pass. I only have three copies of it. You could make copies and distribute it amongst yourselves. This is a report from the National Coalition of Homeless, which we are local member of, and it lists quite a few. It lists quite a few of the issues around the problem with the criminalization of homelessness or creation of anti-homeless laws. And I'd just like to read briefly types of criminalization measures. The criminalization of homeless takes many forms, including legislation that makes it illegal to sleep, set, or store personal belongings in public spaces in cities where people are forced to live in public spaces. Selective enforcement of more natural laws such as loitering or open container laws against homeless persons. Sweeps of city areas where homeless persons are living to drive them out of the area frequently result in destruction of these persons' personal property, including important personal documents and medication, and then laws that punish people for begging or panhandling to move people or homeless persons out of a city downtown area. And this particular law that we're talking about right now includes in the January 16th agenda the issue of loitering downtown. Loitering can basically be spoken as vagrancy laws. And California vagrancy laws were declared unconstitutional in 1941 and have been held up as unconstitutional ever since then. More comment here. These laws that are in existence now are meant to move people away from the city front. The storefronts of the city. Now they want to move them out of the garages too. And as Bernard suggested, the Homeless Resource Center is now not allowing daytime loitering on their place, on their property, so they're being forced back to other places in the community. The garbage that is being complained about is not a homeless camp trash. It's trash that's generated by capitalist money-making projects downtown. And some of the actions of the downtown organizations that put the change machines in, he just admitted to deliberately force people out of the area. This is part of a letter that was sent to the city council members before the last city council meeting, time before, dated January 9th. And I would like to just read from it. I do have copies if you want, but it's also online, and every city council person has one. The proposal is an outlandish capitulation to the bleeding cries from business interests that is already overfed and pampered at the public feeding trough of power called the city council. This proposed law is yet another in a series of ordinances that have favored profit over people in a big giveaway of public spaces. When one leaves the privacy of their own home and journeys into the public realm, one should be prepared to face the myriad of persons and situations that are common to public life in this country of free men and not expect to impose their morals and personal standards as if right and good without due consideration of these freedoms. And I feel that these laws that are on the books at this time and the law that you're hoping to pass is just another in the laws of trying to force people out. The restriction of the use of public space on behalf of business interests is a negative effect to this community. It affects those who are most vulnerable, the poor and the homeless. These laws are also overly broad, giving officers the ability, to enforce, too much ability on enforcement. Hampers the ability of the poor and homeless to participate in a range of traditionally protected forms of expression, including freedom of assembly, freedom of movement, and exposes them to unconstitutional searches and seizures. And I, too, am interested in about what the 10 minutes means. I have a 90-year-old father. It takes him 10 minutes to get his feet out of the door and to go shopping. I have a 9-year-old grandson, and I do not particularly like to go shopping with him for his toys and comic books and whatever else he's after. So I sit in the garage and wait for him and his family to come back. I often have met my friends, and we stand around the car and talk and participate in social communication. That kind of activity is going to be challenged.
Please wrap up your comments.
I want to know what about loitering. Let's see. I guess I want to back up to not being specific. So in other words, we need to have reasonable notice of what conduct is illegal. So I guess the term is called fair notice. Like, what about loitering, idling, wandering, strolling, or playing? Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Are there other members of the public who'd like to speak on this issue?
Morning, Sheila. Morning, everybody. Hi, my name is Robert Norris. I'm with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. A lot of the points that I would have made have been made already, and I'm sure will be ignored by you. I'm sorry about that. I know that you have a primary interest in sort of furthering the interests of the business community down here, and that I find is as admirable in many respects. I have a lot of sympathy for the business community in many ways. In other ways, I'm concerned about the unconstitutional laws. That. Further, I see nothing laws. Never heard of it being anywhere else.
Hang on a second. We're adjusting this downtown commission so we can spin back to the beginning and give you the full panoply of what's cooking here. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. Actually, we're broadcasting, I believe, only on the net. We are going out on the net at freakradio.org. And I'm playing for you a downtown commission hearing that happened several weeks ago.
My question to you about this whole thing, I have a number of them actually, is, first of all, have you actually consulted the Homeless Service Center and the impact on homeless people, or Paul Brindell on the Community Action Board? Have you informed him about this and brought the issue forward? Because it does have a disproportionate effect on people who need to come in out of the rain. People who try to shelter themselves by standing under the eaves at Borders, for example, under the rain. I've talked to at least one individual who was cited twice for doing that and then told to go out into the rain. I do a radio show twice a week, so I kind of cover this beat. You can listen to it on Free Radio 101.1 FM. It's at 6 to 8 on Thursday tonight. In fact, I'll be playing some of this discussion. You're making it illegal to rest in your vehicle for more than 10 minutes, which impacts poor and homeless people who have no place to be. If you don't want homeless people sitting with their stuff in front of the stores, but you're allowing the Homeless Service Center to stop them, to evict them from there, and you're telling them they can't linger in a garage, you're helping me out, because I'd like to see some serious protest to end this whole pack of laws that the City Council put in motion through the Downtown Commission 10 years ago, and that have gotten worse. And I think Joe knows what I'm talking about. It's one of the reasons I can't patronize his store, even though I like him as a personally and as an individual. Also note that these laws impact everybody. Because they can't go after homeless, poor, and young people specifically, you have to give the police broad powers to go after every single individual and limit everybody's liberty to be in this parking garage for more than 10 minutes. It's a unique law, as far as I know. I've never heard of it being anywhere else. Maybe you have. It's not in your packet, so I'm not sure about that. Further, I see nothing in this packet that really clearly indicates the police specifics around the particular numbers of criminal behaviors in the parking lots. I may have missed that. You may have discussed it when I wasn't here, but it doesn't seem to be, at least particularly, in this packet under this item. City Council is going to rely on you for what you know, what its position is going to be. They're passing the buck to you on this issue. If you pass it to them, they're going to rubber stamp it. And to say that they're going to discuss it is, I think, frankly, disingenuous or at least naive at best. They're not going to discuss it. They're going to pass it. They're going to say, well, our downtown commission examined it. You know, they had no problem with it. They recommended it. We're going to pass it right through. So this is a decision you need to make. What about, you know, giving the police a broad mandate? Well, we've seen what's happened when the police have a broad mandate. It's produced massive protests within the last month here around the issue of Spygate. Another thing the city council is not addressing, is putting off for internal analysis, is requiring citizen action on. That is to say, street action and sort of cop watch independent action. So I have here a letter I wrote to city council, actually a month ago, on this issue. I'm glad that you're discussing it, but you need to talk about it more. You need to get the stats. You need to go to the Homeless Service Center and other homeless organizations, see the impact it has on people. You need to get a legal opinion from somebody other than John Barisoni. Thank you very much. Maybe an ACLU attorney on whether this is, you know, constitutional, what you're doing. And you need to really consider what kind of image you're putting out here. Is Santa Cruz the first city that's now going to make it, you know, establish parking lot prisons? You have to get out parking lot forbidden zones. I mean, I would encourage you to think again on this and at least put it off. I know you're under some pressure to proceed with it, but again, I see no specific stats that indicate it. Get the stats, get the reports. I'll leave you this. This is a printout of an online discussion on Santa Cruz Indie Media, in case you want to go there directly and look at it. That is where some discussion is happening around this issue. Also, I would request, I'm running to court, and I'm running from court. I didn't have time to be here for item three. I would request your permission before I leave to speak, when you finished on this item, to speak briefly for 3 minutes on item three in the downtown ordinances, because I didn't have a chance to talk to you. I've had literally hundreds of reports over the last 2 years, 3 years since the new ordinances were put into power on the issue, and I would encourage you to at least give me a chance to speak briefly on that. I apologize for being late.
Thank you, Mr. Norris.
Thanks.
Okay. Sheila?
Matt, did John Barisone address the issue of whether this was constitutional to do this?
I did directly ask the city attorney that question, but I'm sure that the city attorney's thinking about that question whenever he drafts an ordinance. I mean, that's part of what the city attorney's job is to advise the council on establishing regulations that...
But he didn't give you any...
No.
...reasoning, thought process about where it fits in terms of...
I didn't ask that question.
Freedom of assembly.
Okay. Other discussion? Joe?
Just to clarify... one of Robert's comments that this originated from city council, came to us, and whatever we do, they're going to rubber stamp. It's my understanding that this originated at Public Works, came to us to review, and is going to council in that channel, not bouncing back. And it's also been my experience that we as an advisory body can only do that. We don't have any legislative. We are an advisory committee that can look at an issue. We can forward something to the council, but this real serious debate on an issue that happens there. And I think that's probably the better course from my personal experience. I just want to make that comment that I've never seen the city council rubber stamp anything we do. In fact, when it came time to raise the fees, much be there at the council to fight for our position on parking fees to keep that $25 fee down to a $20 fee, otherwise it would have passed. So the perception that they rubber stamp what we do, I think, is a little bit off from my personal experience.
Jerry.
I'd like to make a motion that is not exactly in line with the staff recommendation here. The motion I'd like to make is that we convey to the City Council our concerns about the problems in the parking lots and garages, and that we urge them to seriously evaluate and consider the Public Works proposal without coming right out and saying, we urge you to adopt it. I'd rather say we urge you to take a serious look at it, and we're concerned. That makes sense.
I second that motion.
Pardon? Is there any discussion?
I think that addresses my concern for opening the debate without taking a position on this, is to notify them that they should review this seriously. I think that's a good solution in this situation.
Being a new commissioner, isn't it our job to do the evaluation and then send them a recommendation rather than kind of saying, shouldn't you evaluate this? Wouldn't it seems to me it might make more sense for us to decide to take a little time to consider it ourselves before we make a recommendation.
Is there a timeline around this, Matt, for moving this forward?
No, there's not a timeline around this. I was trying to come up with a strategy that was responsive to a concern I had, but it's going to be a concern for a while, so... there's not a deadline on that.
I had a couple comments. I think, you know, the gentleman that spoke today had some good points about some unintended consequences of these. And a new ordinance is a new ordinance, and it is enforceable. I think that this proposal needs more study of the unintended consequences. There's examples of elderly people sitting in the car waiting for their children to do their shopping, come back, et cetera, that would essentially be citable offenses, basically, if the ordinance were implemented as designed. So I really think we need to be careful about this action. We need to study a little bit more carefully, make sure we hear all the possible unintended consequences of an ordinance. The question I'd like to put out to commissioners is procedure, how to proceed with doing the study. Of those, whether we want to forward a motion to council to do the study, or if that's a role that we could take on.
Okay, you're a little off of the motion now.
Yeah.
You're assuming we're going to vote down.
So I'll go ahead and restate the motion then. And vote?
I think we have to vote.
Well, we might have more discussion.
Okay, yeah. Any more discussion?
I guess, you know, I think we're all basically on the same page, but the question in my mind is, what's the best venue for exploring this further? Is it our commission, and do we have the resources available to us, or is this really a big deal, which belongs more appropriately with the council at an earlier stage?
Sheila.
Well, I agree with Jerry. That was one of my problems, is trying to think. I mean, I think you have a good point. Should we look into it more? I'm trying to think if we have the tools to look into it more. We meet every other month. Will it be the rest of our lifetime before we get this resolved? I have no problem with trying to address this issue. I don't know if we can get at enough. People in the audience spoke about the most vulnerable population. I have a vulnerable population in my house, a 14-year-old girl. And I've heard from a lot of women, and their rights are definitely being infringed upon in the parking garages. I'm afraid to let my daughter walk 5 feet in front of me because she's been harassed, offered drugs, said sexual things too. There's a great deal, of fear of women who are very vulnerable downtown. So from that point of view, I think there's a group of people who have concerns that need to be addressed. The problem I have is we would need to get the police here. We'd have to have open hearings. We'd have to do a lot of things. I guess the question you're asking, Julie, is should we ask the city council, do they want us to do this? Or do they want to do this themselves? If we're going to find out, you know, a great deal more about it, we have to have the attorney here.
Matt, do you have any comments? Questions?
I think what I propose to do is talk a little bit more with the city attorney and the police department and bring this item back in March.
And we're going to have to leave it there. I will play the rest of this exciting downtown commission hearing on Sunday when I get back here at 9:30 in the morning. Sorry we weren't broadcasting today, but at least we were streaming. So, hey, that's something. And, again, this is a useful archive for folks, considering the downtown commission will be returning within probably about a week or two if Matt Farrell, the man you're just hearing on the air, has his way. So, check us out again on Sunday. We'll be back, hopefully, broadcasting. And you can listen to older archive shows.
Broadcasting, Robert.
Now we're broadcasting again? Now they tell me. Fine.
No. There's a special program being broadcast on 101.
Right. I'm not being broadcast. Something else is being broadcast.
I consider that to be an improvement.
Yes, you would. You're broadcasting. Anyway, check us out again on Sunday, and hopefully the show has been useful for those of you who did tune into the archives, because apparently
there's a new show on Sunday. You should remember.
There is indeed. At 7:30 in the morning, Thomas Levitt has a special show, a pale imitation of mine, of course, but nonetheless, one which I commend. Actually, it's a fine show. Thomas has got a different kind of voice, a faster voice, actually. So check him out. What's it called? You know the name of the show?
I saw it today on email, but I don't remember.
Shouting out.
Something about getting up.
Getting up. My goodness. Well, you have to at 7:30 on Sunday morning.
Wake up call.
Wake up call? On Sunday morning. God. Okay. Well, I'm going to be sleeping, but you may be listening, and then I will, of course, have to get up and talk to you as well. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. And remember, unless you want to get ticketed for sitting for 10 minutes in a parking garage, 420-5020 is the number to call to do something about this crazy law before it does something about you.
Whispering the words melt everyone, but you still for those who wait, and time is too swift for those who fear. Time is too long for those who grieve, and time is too short for those that laugh. And love is too slow for those who wait, and love is too swift for those who fear. Love is too long for those who grieve, and love is too short for those that laugh. But for those who love, but for those who really love, but for those who love, time, sweet time, precious time.